Hi, I'm Nina, an educator from Fredericksburg, Virginia. Welcome to School of Practice on Edutopia Radio.
If you've been following the news lately and you're an educator, you're probably aware of the very loud and very public debate about classroom technology. At the heart of this debate is the idea that we're using tech way too much and it's harming learning. More than 24 states have already passed bell-to-bell cell phone bans. And now we're seeing a growing movement to restrict other kinds of classroom tech too. A lot of teachers agree that the tech scales have tipped too far and that we need some kind of course correction.
I became a teacher because I wanted to be a mentor and not just a distributor of PowerPoints and presentations and Google Slides. Just because it's more efficient doesn't mean it's more effective.
That's high school social studies teacher Nick Ferroni. You've probably heard of Nick. He's something of a teacher celebrity. For more than 20 years, he's been teaching at Union High School in Union, New Jersey. And like a lot of other educators, he's trying to find his way back to a place he remembers. A time before tech became the default mode. Back when teaching was messy, human, and hands-on. He thinks he was a much better teacher then, and kids acted more like kids. Nick said as much in an Instagram post he published last summer. He made a pledge to dial way back on classroom tech.
So next year, I'm going back. Back to more paper, more writing, more notebooks, more eye contact, more conversations, more hands-on, real-time learning. And less clicking, less scrolling, less cut and pasting, less tech.
In this episode, we're going to hear how Nick turned the clock back, why he lets his high schoolers play games like Uno and 7-Up, and what he thinks his students have gained from less tech time. One big insight: you really can't remove technology from the classroom entirely, and you probably don't want to. This is School of Practice, where we share what works inside real classrooms. I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school teacher. Educators, let's face it, there's a lot technology does really well, and too many students who still need it. But you can, in fact, strike a much better balance. Nick is going to show us how. Let's dive in. Nick, let's start by going back to the early days of one-to-one laptop use in your school. This was about 6 or 7 years ago. Tell me, what changed when laptops entered your classroom?
First, it provided an opportunity for students to not pay attention. And students, I hate to say it, but they're better at tech than we are. So they found loopholes in all the servers to get Netflix and to get all the streaming programming that they wanted. And I don't blame them. If I was in calculus class and I had a laptop, I would probably be watching SportsCenter and not paying attention to calculus.
Was there any part of those early days that were exciting to you? Were you initially, you know, on board, ready to apply this new tech, or was it always sort of like this was trouble from the start?
I mean, there's always an exciting aspect because, hey, now if they want an answer to a question, they can just Google it or research it online. But it also, introducing technology led us to have to teach and educate students 100 different ways. Obviously, we taught media literacy and primary and secondary sources, but now we got to teach social media literacy and website literacy and understanding what's true and what's not and why you need multiple sources to understand something. So it expanded the work that educators have to do and honestly made an additional problem that we weren't probably ready for or prepared to alleviate.
Like a lot of teachers, Nick leaned all the way into tech during the pandemic. Then when his students returned to the classroom, he noticed that tech was still at the center of things, especially Chromebooks. And this got him thinking about what was being lost to tech. But he didn't pull the plug all at once.
It was definitely gradual because for much of their academic lives, a year and a half or close to 2 years were behind the computer. I mean, that messes with the wiring in your brain. That messes with so many aspects of you. I'm always the slow and steady person. So I definitely took more time the first month of school, the first time we came back in September, to allow them to get obviously comfortable, and not only in school, but in my classroom, and just comfortable being around other people.
Okay, Nick, last summer you created a social media post that went viral on Instagram. You said that your most effective teaching happened, quote, before Google, laptops, and tech were even part of the classroom, unquote. Take me back to what you were feeling before you put out that post. What was it? Extreme frustration? Was it anger? Was it despair?
Well, it's definitely, I mean, it's all of the above. Frustration, self-awareness, knowing that my students deserve better and that tech is not going to provide it. So for example, when I taught about the Declaration of Independence, during the pandemic and slightly after, I used this presentation that I made. I put so much effort and energy into it, and my students could not gain or retain anything from it.
This was a digital presentation.
Presentation.
Yeah.
Visually, videos, I gave them
fancy
information,
slides.
100 fancy slides, beautiful, spent hours on it. Before the pandemic, I used to do a social experiment to teach the Declaration of Independence. So I decided I'm going to bring that back. So I do this social experiment where we obviously touch on the Declaration, but I then tell my students, we're going to do the same thing. So I have them create a list of grievances against the school. I have them debate on the grievances. I then have them sign their names on it. And I'm like, I'm going to hand deliver it to the principal. It's like, these are great ideas. And then I have the principal come down and threaten my students by saying it's insubordination.
You assigned your principal this role.
Yes, yes. My principal always participates. So after a day or two, it's like it becomes chaos. And then we reveal the premise of the example and they get it. And then from there, I have them try to research the Declaration on what it meant. What were their grievances? How are they similar? And their engagement was so much different after they experienced a taste of what it was like. That just was my reinforcement that, you know, I could create the best presentation ever about the Declaration, but if I can give them an activity that puts them in that moment in a similar scenario, like it will last longer and they'll understand it better.
Nick, what would you say was the problem that you were trying to solve with this pledge to return to less technology?
The problem I was trying to solve was to provide the skills that I know will last a lot longer than any technology will. Whether it's even taking notes. You know, I did an experiment where I had half my students take notes typing and half of them take writing, and then I gave them a quiz. And the students who wrote it down did so much better than the students who typed it. And then I shared the results with them and I'm like, why? And then we talk about how when you write something, you're seeing it, it goes into your short-term memory. You retain more information when you write it down.
Did your students automatically buy in at that point, or did they still push back and, you know, advocate for taking notes on their laptops?
No. Some students are like, well, I'm better at taking notes on my laptop. I'm like, that's great. It's like, I'm better at going food shopping than I would be hunting. You know, it's like, of course, just because it's more efficient doesn't mean it's more effective. And I kind of stress that to them.
Have you encountered students who don't actually know how to write by hand? I'm thinking of cursive in particular, but just in general, that are not very comfortable because all through school, up until high school, they've been on computers.
Yeah. And that's the other irony, too, where people blame teachers for bad penmanship and not technology because kids don't have to write. And it's interesting because even as an adult who grew up writing, it's like, I'll write a card, my hand will start to hurt because my muscles are not used to writing that much. So I didn't realize how much of a situation was until I had students initially write, but it does progressively get better as the school year goes on. Of course, I have students who still journal and still do things who have impeccable handwriting, but most students, like you said, the only communication they have is either texting, typing, or emailing, and that's it.
How did you navigate tech use with students who qualify for accommodations? So I'm thinking of students with dysgraphia or students who are challenged with really writing anything by hand.
There's obviously, I've had students who had exceptions because of IEPs and other modifications. And for the most part, students will try to participate as much as they can, but they know they're allowed to utilize aspects of technology that if it makes it more efficient, more effective for them. So there, obviously, there's always exceptions to that rule.
Now, Nick, you said in your Instagram post that when you first started teaching, you thought you were more effective and that you had to go back to what worked. Talk to me about the effective strategies you used in your early teaching days that you wanted to revive.
I mean, some people are going to hate this, but lecture and note-taking. Explain to my students that I'm not going to lecture you for 40 minutes, but I'm going to give you a lecture with visuals and I want you to take notes and key points. Like even that form of note-taking, again, like efficiently, I could give them a handout of the notes, but they may not remember it. They may not read it. Some will, some won't. I mean, there were so many times when I would put different little cues inside presentations, like halfway through, I would put like comment on the post that you're not reading this. And I had so many students who wouldn't even write that, which shows me they weren't reading it. And I had like three or four students like, I'm not reading this. And then my other students like, why would they write that? I'm like, because they read it. Because they know that when they got to the end, I told them to comment on a slide. So there were moments like that where I'm just like, lecture, handouts, fill-in, dittos were much more effective than me just handing you the work.
Were these back to basics tactics more work for you?
It's always more work when I'm sure you fought over the copy machine a few times. I'm sure Your life depended on you getting copies a certain morning and then it's jammed and you can't.
I was going to say, you better hope that's not jammed that day. Yeah.
So it's so much more prep, but I feel like in my 23rd year now, it's like I have everything I need so I can plan 2 weeks in advance. And so it does make it a little easier in that sense. I mean, assessment-wise, I still give them a majority of assessments in Google Forms or presentations. I'll have them do some handwritten ones on occasion, open-ended, short answer, just to kind of mix it up a little bit. But again, like I explained to them, like my goal is to not only nurture their strengths, but to improve their weaknesses and try to hit their brain from every possible way I can to obviously give them skills that they can apply to any subject, any content, or just... Again, like we do vision boards in my class. What does that do with history? Nothing. But it's just creating that environment where kids know there's so much more to this.
Vision boards as in like actual like cutting pictures out and putting them on poster board, not like Pinterest boards online.
I'll allow some students, they have the option to create something that they keep as their screensaver. But majority of students, I give them extra credit if they actually make an actual board, which I provide the resources for.
And by giving extra credit for an actual tangible vision board, you're incentivizing that hand to paper, real world activity again.
Well, I tell them, I've done both. I've had it on my phone. I've had it on my wall. And when it's on my wall, I feel like I achieve a lot more than when it's on my phone because you see it every day.
After the break, we'll hear Nick Ferroni's practical tips for getting his students to disconnect from their screens and engage more with each other, and where he sees value in keeping some tech in the mix of his teaching. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi. It's Nikki from Edutopia's community team with a quick update. Teacher to Teacher is now part of Edutopia, and we'd love for you to be part of it. Head to edutopia.org/teacher-to-teacher and jump in, either by asking a question, offering advice, or sharing a resource for another teacher. When you do, mention this ad and you'll unlock a limited edition thank you gift for helping us shape what's next. See you there.
Okay, Nick, let's get into the specifics so that other teachers who are listening can try what you tried. So once you've made the decision to dial back on screen time in your classroom, what was the first thing that you did?
First thing I did was to go through all my old folders. So if you're a veteran teacher, guaranteed you have file cabinets after file cabinets of dittos and papers. And I just tried to find which ones I thought were the most effective. So the first thing you did is it's spring cleaning. You go through what you're going to use. The next thing is obviously the planning. Everything we do on tech, we could do on paper. You know, it's like there's always ways to transition. And again, I started off with one activity a week, and then I went up to two, And it's not an all or nothing thing. Like, again, gradually, I wanted to make it easier on me. So every week I'm like, okay, we're going to do a hands-on activity, no tech this day. And then next time, okay, we're going to do it this day. And then I keep adding on until I'm at a comfortable place on where I want to be.
Do you remember the first non-tech activity that you tried with students after making this pledge?
The first thing I did was make it a fun day. Every other Friday, I had a tech-free Friday where students would play board games, play cards, Uno, draw, color, read, play charades.
And just a reminder to listeners, these are high school students.
Yeah, these are high school students, and they absolutely loved it. I mean, they played 7-Up, like games, and it was just the only rule was they can't have any technology. Whatever, if they want to sit there and talk for 30 minutes, I'm like, you could sit here and talk for 30 minutes. But students would bring their sketchbooks, they'd bring their own books, they would play the board games I had.
Did you feel pressure to have to sort of justify that tech free day with your students to your administrator?
I didn't, because I got so much out of them for 4 days. My administrator was completely fine with. I think I had one vice principal come in when they were playing board games. I'm like, well, what's the lesson today? I'm like, oh, today's a tech-free Friday. And then I explained to him, I'm like, okay, that's a good idea. And it's like, not every Friday, but it's just every other Friday we do this just to have them disconnect and just have them kind of regroup and get back to neutral and just enjoy themselves.
You know, and thinking about using this tech-free Friday as sort of an on-ramp to less technology in your classroom, what were your objectives there?
Well, the first was to get them used to not being on their phones, then used to not being on their computers or watching YouTube. So it was slowly to get them to disconnect and understand that there's more to education and academics and life than technology.
Was there anything that after you made that pledge, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this for sure around technology, and then you started it in the early days, and then you decided this is not working at all, and we're going to scrap that?
The one thing I would say, the biggest issue I had is always with research. I mean, I was like, we're going to use the textbooks. I have them. I have a classroom set. And then it just, for some reason, it seemed to be more beneficial for them if they were able to have the textbook on their computer or Google the question and then find their response, then write down. So I tried to balance that. Originally, I was like, they're going to research specifically like we researched.
You're going to learn how to use the card catalog
again.
You're
going to learn the Dewey Decimal System, you know, that sort of stuff. Yeah, but I quickly realized that that may be too much too soon. So I kind of just pulled it back a little bit and said, we can still use it for this, this, and this.
You mentioned that it continues to be challenging to untangle tech from research. Are there other things that you've found in your classroom that you're still sticking to relying on tech?
I mean, it's tough because I have some students who like to use Canva. So when it comes to presentations, and they'll use Canva, which is fine. Or I have students who like to create digital designs instead of hand-drawing designs. And so there's, like, I do an activity where I have my students, they get a historical product from the 1800s and they have to make a brand, a company, a sales pitch, and do like a Shark Tank pitch. So some students will hand draw it. Some students will use tech for their presentation. So there is some advantages to that. It allows people who may not feel creative to be a little more creative.
Or like people who may not feel crafty but are creative in other ways, right? Like students who could be very fluent in Canva with graphic design, might not actually be crafty, might not be inclined to like cut things out and glue stick things away, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like my goal is also to find out what they're passionate about, what they're good at, and kind of nurture that and try to incorporate it into lessons.
So research, some graphic design. Is there anything else that you're like, okay, we'll keep tech for that?
We still play Kahoot, which kids love. So it's, there is aspects of technology. And again, I start most lessons off with a short video clip, and that leads into our discussion. So there is such a benefit for technology, but I always joke around. People are like, so what is it like teaching nowadays? I'm like, do you remember the one day you were in class and you saw the TV rolling and you got excited? Now every kid has a TV in their pocket and they can watch whatever they want anytime.
Nick, this has been amazing. Before we wrap up, I want to reflect and look ahead to the future. So you just finished your first year of your technology dial back experiment. Let's recap your biggest lessons learned and takeaways. Give me the top two or three.
The top two or three would be, when it comes to engagement, technology is the antithesis of engagement for the classroom environment. And again, not every student's going to be engaged in a lesson, but the majority will if there is some aspect to kind of the human component. So I'd say my biggest takeaway is my students were far more engaged this year than they were in previous years. They were far more outspoken in class than they have been in previous years. They were far more emotionally stable and emotionally intelligent than they have been in previous years because of the constant presence, discussion, conversation, and just being self-aware of the environment. When they're not focused looking down on a screen all day, oblivious to everybody else around them. So there is that awareness that we are in a communal area. You know, it's kind of like, it's a difference between being in a conference room and being in a cubicle. When you're in a conference room, everyone's a part of the party. When you're in a cubicle, you could do your own thing when you want. No one's going to know. No one's going to bother you. So it kind of forces them to be a part of the conversation. So my one thing for this upcoming year is technology will never be the foundation of my lesson plans as it has been in the past.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, dialing back on classroom tech doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can start slowly and experiment. Nick Ferroni didn't start the school year by pulling the plug on laptops completely. He kicked things off with tech-free Fridays and then ramped up step by step. Nick's advice is to find one weekly lesson or activity that doesn't require tech and then build from there. Two, technology is often distracting for students, but there are a lot of hidden costs for teachers too. According to Nick, teachers are stuck doing media literacy classes and social media etiquette classes. Reducing tech might mean teachers can dedicate more time to their actual subject matter. Three, laptops and tablets do still have their advantages, say for doing research and graphic design. Nick still has his students play computer games, like Kahoot, just for fun. So, eliminating classroom tech isn't the end game. It's about finding balance between how much class time is focused on human interaction and collaboration, and how much is tech-driven and supported. Balance isn't a one-size-fits-all prescription. Special thanks to Nick Ferroni for speaking with us. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us a rating and a review. This helps other people find our show. This episode was produced by Nancy Rosenbaum and edited by me. Our engineer is Rachel Leitner, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. I'm Kristen Leong. Thanks for listening.